And we are live. How is everybody?
Fantastic.
I'm so stoked you guys are here again. I really am. Y'all have been some of my favorite guests so far. Y'all really won me over on the last episode. So just tell my audience what's going on. There were a number of people that couldn't make it to the last episode. So, and Steve and Ann, Steve is the director of the film. Ann is the producer of the film. I wanted to make sure they were on as well. So we decided to do kind of a redo, but we're actually going to, I'm going to do kind of a part one, part two. So this is going to count as part two of the interview. So just to start, I'm going to get everybody to introduce themselves, talk about what, their part in the film, what segment they were in. And we're going to go with Ann first.
Hi, I'm Ann Myrna, and I'm the producer for Turpidity.
All right, Paige.
Hi, my name is Paige Bourne, and I play Taylor in the 1986 segment of Trepidity.
Tatum, you're up.
Hi, I'm Tatum Shoesmith, and I play Samantha, or as some call her, Sam, in the 1986 segment as well.
Awesome. And Beth. Oh, Beth, we can't hear you.
You look great, though.
Do you want to, like, go out and go back in, Beth?
Yeah, that might be the best option. And I can just edit all this out since we're not live.
That's Beth Metcalf, and she plays Melissa in Trepidity.
Crushed it. Nice.
Yep.
Well, technical difficulties are part of it.
Yeah.
So we're waiting on Beth to come back. And I'm going to start with you. So tell us a little bit about being the producer for the film and how you got that role and just kind of what your strategy was.
Sure. This is my first time as a film producer. I met Steve Herman a little less than a year ago as he was working on a project called Morium. And it was a project that was very interesting to me because it's based on bullying. And so I started following Equistar Films and what they were doing. I even auditioned for a role in Morium, which I did not get cast in, and just kind of kept in touch with what his production company was doing. And I was very interested because Steve is an author and author turned filmmaker. And I've worked on quite a few independent films as an actor. And sometimes the story is like okay, but not great, particularly the endings sometimes fall short and the writing is awkward sometimes. So I've had to work with some other filmmakers in terms of like encouraging them to maybe modify the writing a little bit to make it more natural delivery. And with Steve's writing, it's just on point all the time. The stories are good. The stories are interesting. They have twists and turns. You never know exactly what's going to happen. And looking at his style of filming, it looks cinematic, very professional. So I was just really attracted to Equistar Films as an independent filmmaker because of the quality of the work. So keeping in touch with him as he was going through various projects, when he started talking about Trepidity, he was a little concerned about the scope of it being quite large. And so I just offered to help organize things. So took on the role of producer, not really from a creative standpoint, but more of a line producer. So put together the budget for the film, helped out with props and crafty. And we put together actually two Indiegogo campaigns. The first one was for production expenses and the second was for finishing funds, and put together a Facebook group. We have over 1,500 members of that group now. So I was learning as I was going and kind of figuring out really where our target market is, and then recruited those people to join the Facebook group and then kept promoting the fundraisers. And we were pretty successful with, the actors got paid, the cinematographer got paid, music person's getting paid. We covered the cost of the special effects. So we achieved our goals.
Yeah. And actually that leads to one of the next questions I was going to ask you. I wanted you to talk a little bit about that Indiegogo campaign and share as much detail as you're comfortable to share, because that seems to be one of the most popular routes to fund films today. And I think it would be beneficial to hear from someone who's had an Indiegogo campaign, what you did, like, you know, from start to finish. How did you get members of the group? How did you reach out to people? Kind of walk us through that campaign, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Indiegogo is a good campaign because you get to keep the funds that you raise, whether or not you hit your goal. So you have to kind of look at your budget and then look at the market for people who might contribute to it and figure out, you know, do I want to go for the entire budget or do I want to just go for a portion of it? So that strategy is going to vary based on the production. And then you need to come up with a good teaser video. And we actually did better with our second campaign because we had a real teaser trailer of actual footage to use for the finishing funds campaign, whereas the initial production campaign, we didn't shoot a trailer. We just did kind of an interview style talking head at the location where we were going to be filming. So there was an aspect of what the film would look like, but you, as a consumer, you couldn't really tell what the film would look like from that initial video that we put together. So I think that's why we were more successful with the second campaign. Very tangible product at that point in time. And then for perks, you know, the script was already written before we decided to do the Indiegogo campaign. So we couldn't, you know, add a contributor as a character. We couldn't let people decide the character names. We had no room for product placement because we shot in a creepy murder barn. So you wouldn't have like a coffee mug with a logo sitting in the background or someone's photo on the wall or, you know, things like that that are common with fundraising campaigns. So we stuck with things like digital download of the script signed by the cast and crew, the poster signed by the cast and crew. But we also offered IMDb credits. And it's a little bit of a controversial perk for fundraising campaigns because people basically pay money and then will attach their name to the film on the Internet Movie Database. Do they do any actual work on the film? No. But it's something that they want. They want to be involved in a movie. They're not an actor. So it gives them gratification and it gives us funding. So we look at it as a win-win, but you know, some filmmakers are like, oh, you know, you're giving away producer credits and they don't actually do any producing. We're okay with that because the person who contributed got something that they wanted out of their contribution.
Right. Well, and I mean, I think that's one of the things that a producer brings to the table anyway is financing. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a fair argument for that being a legitimate thing to give away. You know, I personally don't have any issues with it. I think it's a fantastic thing because I mean, people want to make movies, and it's an industry that's not always been super accessible to people. You know, and we're in such a unique time in the industry. It's become so accessible to everyone, but. You know, I don't know. I think that's fantastic. One of the questions I have too, the Facebook group, how did you go about getting people in the Facebook group? Were you sending out emails to people randomly? Were you just finding people and sending them friend requests? Like how did you pull that off?
Well, initially I thought, you know, I have a lot of friends. We've got people in the cast. They have a lot of friends. All of our friends will just make up this Facebook group and give us all this money. And that did not happen. I did get a lot of support from my personal friends, even going back to people I knew in high school, and I'm old and I'm not like in constant contact with those people, but they saw I was doing something and I had my heart in it. And so they put some money behind it, which is just awesome. But we actually got support from people around the world. So I was able to, I initially started by joining a lot of horror groups on Facebook to just kind of see what people are talking about, what the industry is all about. And then I kind of recruited people from those groups by doing friend requests. And after I did a few, all of a sudden I would friend a total stranger and we would have like 156 common friends, people I've never met, but people who are in the filmmaking business, either as actors, producers, filmmakers, writers, music people, just all sorts of creative types. So I have done some really great networking and made some awesome friends. And I've gotten to know a lot of those people just because I happened to reach out with that friend request. And then a few days later, I would invite them to join the group. And I got a pretty good return rate on using that technique.
Yeah, it's been really incredible. I mean, and weekly, I'm seeing those posts come in of you know, let's welcome our new members. It's like, yes, it's so great.
Yep.
Jake is here. Jake, how you doing, buddy?
Good, my man. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. I'm so glad to see you joined.
Yeah, I was excited. I was looking forward to it.
Let me pause real quick, and Beth's back as well. Beth, introduce yourself and tell us what you did in the film.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, I got it. Okay, hey, I am Beth Metcalf. I play Melissa. I voice the demon, and I did all the special effects and the blood and guts for Trepidity.
Awesome. And Jake, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us about the segment you're in.
My name is Jake Yanko. I play Doug Trepidity in the first like part of it. And really excited to be a part of it.
I just want the audience to know, if you haven't seen the movie yet, Jake had a fantastic 1970s mustache in this movie.
It was nice. I miss it so bad, but it got a problem where I kept like, whenever I drank a beer, it would leave the foam all in the mustache, and it was getting everywhere. I mean, it's a flavor saver. It was some work, so I had to shorten her a little bit. But
that is the burden you carry with facial hair, my friend. It's you know, I miss like 4 weeks ago, my beard was down to here, and I accidentally messed it up trimming it, and I'm in the process of growing it back. But I noticed the worst part about that is I could not eat anything without having all kinds of stuff in my beard, and it was quite embarrassing. And at that point, you have to rely on your friends to tell you that you have stuff in your beard, and you know, some friends are better than others with that. So,
I know that.
So I want to switch over to Beth for a few minutes. Beth did the special effects, and Beth, talk to us a little bit about your background with doing makeup effects.
With makeup, it started when I was like 12, and I got to watch my first couple scary movies, and it kind of took off from there in haunted houses. So I was just kind of in my room with liquid latex, that really bad, like blood from Spirit Halloween, and like a little bit of like cream makeup, trying to make little wounds. And just from there, I got it more experience just from practicing in my room. I bought better stuff, started doing makeup for haunted houses, and then just decided, I was like, I think I want to put this into film as well. And then I got all the stuff, and then did Stan Winston School of Makeup Arts, and still enrolled in that, always learning. That's kind of my background on makeup.
Do you remember what those first two films were that you saw?
Oh, I want to say it was like one of the Saw films. Very bloody.
Really? One of your first horror films is one of the Saw films?
Yeah, which I thought that was an interesting way to start it off at the age of 12. But I also watched Poltergeist. That was another early one for me.
That's one of those films that'll show you whether or not you're cut out for horror. If you can get through that film and ask for seconds of something else, then you know that you're cut out for it, you know?
Oh, yeah. I was obsessed with the Saw series at a very young age. And I was like, there's something here. And now I'm like, ooh. Yeah, here we are getting everyone bloody all the time on film sets.
That's super cool. Cause like that's when you're telling that story, it makes me think of Tom Savini, which, you know, you and I are both big fans of. I mean, that's what he did. He was the kid running around making up all his friends, you know, and I love when he tells the story, you know, he would make his friends up and they go home and they're like, oh yeah, stay away from that Savini kid. He's going to, you know, we don't want him doing this to you. So when it came to the effects for Trepidity, were you kind of given like total creative freedom by Steve? Did he just say like, Beth, think of ways to kill people? Like how did that process go?
Yeah. So it started with Steve was like, this is kind of what I'm thinking. I'm like, okay, so this is how much this costs. This is how much I priced it out. And then we worked with budgeting to see what we could and couldn't do. And I was like, oh, what about this? What about this? So we just kind of bounced ideas off each other. Most of them were his, but then I'd be like, oh, what if we added this? It's a very collaborative effort in creating all the kills.
Yeah, there were some very, one of the things that stuck out to me the most was I gotta be careful what I say, cause I don't want to give things away in the film, but there was a missing eye on a character. And I was really, when I saw that, I was really kind of taken aback, but I thought, wow, that's really good. And then you explained to the audience how you pulled that off. Cause it's not like I thought you would have done it.
Yeah. We really just played with shadows. There was no makeup really involved. It was really just a lighting thing. And it was really more of an afterthought even, cause that wasn't even planned.
Yeah, and it looked really, really good. I mean, just to have played with shadows, it looked really good. So it was just creative blood placement and just lighting.
Yeah.
That's so fantastic. And folks, let me tell you, there is a lot of blood in this movie. A lot. If you had to guess, how much blood did you guys go through?
Oh, I made it. I kept making it and running out. At least 2 gallons, at least.
Wow.
And that's just the 80s section.
That's incredible.
I don't know how much they use on the other one.
Now, did Steve did the 1976 segment, the makeup effects on it, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay, gotcha. Now, there were some fake guts. Tell us about the fake guts. What did you do to make those look realistic? Were they latex? Did you use actual guts? What was your process with that?
So they were silicone. I rented them, which is a fun thing to do and put on.
I didn't know you could rent that. That's
yeah, interesting. You can rent them. Like I know a lot of people in the haunt industry that I rented them off of a buddy. And I get to put these things in my tax return and I'm like, gut rental. And I'm like, I hope the IRS sees this. But they were silicone guts. And we use like some extra blood, a little bit of like Vaseline to make them slimy and icky. They already had that little bit of shine from that silicone caulking around them. And they were already pre-colored. So it was placement, adding blood in different spots, trying to be practical about it. Like how much blood would really, because we didn't want to douse them because we wanted them to show really well on camera and read well. So lots of Vaseline.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how realistic that can make it. Not only with the glisten, but also that like slippery kind of, because like if guts get handled, you can tell when it's not done right. They have a certain slipperiness to them that I think subconsciously you look for. And if you don't see it, there's something done wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. Now you don't have to divulge this, but I am curious, what did you use for your blood formula?
My blood formula, it was a mixture of different Karo syrups. I found a dark one that I really like. I'm probably going to use for future projects. But it's a lot of corn syrup, a lot of red dye, and a little bit of cocoa powder.
Really?
And then water to make it runny. Because you have to have the different, like if you're spraying it, it has to be runnier so it can get through the sprayer. And then we would do the spray. And then I would come back with scab blood, get it on them so that it would stick and it wouldn't run down their face.
I am. And actually that brings up another question I have. The blood sprays, there are two I'm going to ask about. You know, when the characters were getting sprayed in the face with the blood, you know, it had a really nice kind of fine droplet consistency to it. How did you pull that off?
So we did the old fire hose effect. I had this pump and I had a hose connected to it and I had a finer hose, but I took the finer hose off, put my thumb over the whole of the bigger section of the hose and just got the spray right. And I was like, all right, keep my thumb there. Let's go. So once I found the placement, I was like, all right, let's go.
And so you did have a, cause I mean, there's one scene where they just get drenched. I mean, like it's an Evil Dead level, like just hose to the face. Everybody's covered in blood. And that was done with the pump as well.
Yeah. We pumped it very, very hard. It was like about ready to explode. And I was like, all right, get my thumb over it. And I put full throttle on the other handle and it just skyrocketed at them.
it's a great, we were talking about, Beth and I were talking about this, last night. Was it last night you and I were discussing it? The length of the scene.
Yeah.
And there's some question about whether or not to leave it at its current length or to shorten a little bit. But I think the cool thing is if we leave it if it's left at its current length, it's a really cool ode to Evil Dead. Cause I mean, Bruce Campbell just gets absolutely drenched in blood. And I think it'd be a really cool ode to that if you guys left it that way. So that's just my two cents. I think it should stay the length that it is. And Beth, let me ask you too. So you voiced the demon.
Yes.
And there's a really, really great scene where you're doing a voiceover of the demon. What was your inspiration for that? Like, what, like, did was there a character you've seen in another film that, that kind of was your, like, what was your inspiration?
Yeah. So it all started with, Snappy the Clown. That was my first role with, Steve in Acrostar Films in the dark. And, that clown I comprised of he from the Powerpuff Girls or him from the Powerpuff Girls, Pennywise and Annabelle. And I put them all into one and made Snappy. And then I used Snappy, but made it a little more evil and demonic. And that's kind of how the progression of the demon voice happened.
Did you have to do a lot of takes for that voiceover? Or was it a pretty quick
I did a lot of takes, but with different vocal inflections, because I like the musicality of Snappy. I wanted to keep that in the Trepidity version. So I just did a bunch of different takes emphasizing different words up and down. And I was like, Steve, you can pick from these which one you think will fit best.
How many takes total do you think it took? Because, like, I know just doing this podcast, I usually will record an intro and I'll kind of write something down and just go from there. And I've sometimes done like 20 different takes on the intro and like start splicing things together.
Yeah, I want to say it probably took, I want to say between 10 and 15 takes just for that scene, because I got really picky on it. I was like, oh, I don't like that. I'll just delete it. And then I got about 3 or 4 that I liked that were variants of each other. And then I sent them over.
And the last question I have about the effects, what kind of unique challenges did you run into in this production with the makeup effects?
Latex allergy by far was the hardest challenge. And I had to use prosthetics made out of watermelon.
That's okay. You got to elaborate on that one. I want to hear more about that.
Yeah. The watermelon prosthetic, it's, you can get it. There's a bunch of places. There's a few watermelon makeup sellers. There's just kind of a paste that they can make, but I bought pre-made prosthetics. I won't say which one. I'll tell you off the record. One of the wounds that was inflicted is fully watermelon. And it took me a lot of tries back at home to make sure I could get it rigged up right, because they're much more flimsy than latex. So that was definitely my hardest challenge, was testing that blood rig over and over and over to make sure I got it right.
And there's a lot of pressure to doing the makeup effects as well, you know, because I mean, it's you only get so many tries at something, you know, and you have to make it work. And that's something I've kind of picked up on recently too, just in venturing into filmmaking, just the level of pressure that goes into makeup effects. And Beth, you did, I don't have the words to tell you how good you did. Like, you did such a good job. The effects look great. It's fun. You absolutely knocked it out of the park. It's fantastic. Much. Yeah, absolutely. Everybody did fantastic in this film. This is such a, I got to, just full disclosure, I got to see a screener, and I'm telling you all, you're going to love it. This is one of the best independent films I've ever seen. I can't talk today. This is one of the best independent films I've ever seen. The cinematography is top notch. The story is top notch. The acting is top notch. But I think what stands out above everything is, just in my conversations with all of you, is the chemistry that exists amongst the cast. And you all, and let's kind of branch out to all of you for a second. A lot of you have worked together on other projects, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. I definitely.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about how you guys all met each other, how you got involved with Acrofilm or Acrostar Films. And Tatum, I'm going to start with you, because Tatum actually just directed her first short film. And if you want to briefly tell us about that real quick, you go right ahead, Tatum.
So I recently directed a short film. It's about mental awareness and depression, dealing with depression, where it's basically about one girl, and then she's facing like her inner self and her darker self, and she's battling that. And you see those conversations, and you see the ups and the downs of it. And yeah, and hopefully by the end of it, it's called Hope, so there's some hope at the end, and that's the whole point of it. So yeah, that was super exciting to be able to direct that and also act in it. So yeah, I liked wearing both hats. It was fun.
Yeah, it's super exciting. That's absolutely something to be proud of.
Thank you.
How did you get connected with Steve?
So I met Steve through backstage. He had a calling on backstage for, I originally auditioned for Morium and I didn't get Morium. And then he remembered me and he said, I actually, about like 6 months later, he was like, I actually have another project that I think that you'd fit really well. And it was In the Dark. And that's where I met Paige and Beth. That was great. And then after I did that project with him, he ended up losing his lead or one of his lead actresses for Morium. And so he offered me that. And now I've been with him with a bunch of different projects. So it's been, awesome opportunity.
That's awesome. Beth, what about you? How did you connect with Steve originally?
Also on backstage, it was the In the Dark movie short film. I auditioned for one of the best friend role, or no, the, yeah. And he was like, okay, that's good. And he saw that I had haunt actor credits and scary movie monster credits. And he was like, I have this role for a clown and it's a guy, but I could make it a girl. And I was like, oh yeah, let's be a clown. Let's do it. So I became Snappy and the rest is history.
It can be argued that's the scariest thing out there is clowns.
Yeah.
Paige, you get it. Like I can see on your face that you're with me on the clown thing.
Big no to clowns. They freak me out. Beth, you freaked me out. Mission accomplished.
I never got the clown scare. But they're kind of nice. I don't know. They look funny.
I think what was super funny is when Beth wasn't like being Snappy, but she had like all of the makeup. And she was just chilling on the bed, just like staring off into space.
Or like on her phone. Creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things you can't unsee. Jake, how are you not afraid of clowns, man?
I will say I did work at a haunted house for like 3 years and I played a clown. So that might have skewed my opinion. You know, when you are the clown, it's definitely a lot less scary. So maybe it was like 3 years of clowning that might have eased me into, you know, I can get with the clown game.
So Jake, how did you get connected with Steve?
I met Steve through backstage auditioning for Morium, which I was in. I played Tyler Grunderson, and that's also where I met Tatum in that. And that shoot was just, it was so much fun. I loved everyone in it, everyone that was a part of it. It was it was a blast, and everything I filmed with him so far. And I've got a couple other projects lined up soon that I'll be filming with them, and I'm excited for all of them. And it's been awesome. A blast, yeah.
Paige, how about you? How did you meet Steve?
So I also met Steve through backstage auditioning for In the Dark. That best friend character that Beth mentioned, that's who I ended up playing. In the Dark was cool. I think we did that like March of last year or something like that. And it was like a full day long shoot. I hadn't met anybody starting that, but I feel like just after we were done shooting, like at the end of the day, I was like, oh, like I made friends. Like we're AcroStar now. Yeah, it was cool.
And just from the outside looking in, having gotten to connect with you all and kind of see our things, I would say y'all really seem like a family at AcroStar. You really get that vibe from all of you that you're a family. Would you all agree with that?
I think it's super cool that Steve kind of uses like an ensemble of actors, I guess, if you could say that. Like he just keeps working with the same people over and over again, which is great because then it's like when we keep doing these other projects like Trepidity, it's like we've already met each other. We've already like hung out and we're friends and we just get to like pick up right where we left off. And I think it makes the end product like that much better.
Yeah.
It is an awesome little family. Yeah. Everyone's just, great.
I think cohesively we get better and better with each project we do because we know each other and we're just working as a unit. And I think that's really, really good for AcroStar and for everyone involved because we're just trying to get better and better and we're always trying to learn and improve and help each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Having that comfort level makes everything more fun. And then you're willing to like try different things that you probably wouldn't with someone you just met. So yeah, makes everything run smoother.
Yeah, you have to be with like a special group of people to be like covered in blood at 5 a.m, like pretending to kill each other. Like it just helps when you're already friends.
That's true. And there's actually a great story told last episode, but I want to hear it one more time. So a couple of you covered in blood, went back to the hotel. still covered in blood. Y'all tell that story for me.
So yeah, we've wrapped filming and it was like really early. The breakfast had just started and I think it was Paige, you got there first and you were just eating your breakfast covered in blood.
Yep, I was like half 80s, half blood. It was like 6 a.m, so the hotel breakfast had already been set up, and I was like, I need some bacon and eggs. And so I just sat, like, hardly anyone else was around, thank God. But yeah, I just, like, sat in the corner of the hotel dining room area and just ate some breakfast, and then I took a shower.
That's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be able to just sit and eat breakfast covered in blood.
I should have taken the cops picture. Call
or something. You really should have. That would have been great. Like, That would be your permanent. You could be 80 years old and that would still have to be your permanent Facebook picture.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just kicking myself for not like being in the right state of mind to take a picture of that.
Let me tell you what you do. Recreate it. Get covered in blood again and just go to a random hotel, sit down and like have the continental breakfast to get a picture of it.
Maybe for like Trepidity 2, I'll remember this for next time.
Definitely. Hey, Steve, are you connected now?
Yep, I'm here.
Awesome. Everybody, let's welcome Steve. Steve, how you doing, brother?
Okay. Thank you.
Awesome, man. Super, super glad to have you on. So, Steve is the director of the film. I think we've said that, but I'll say it again. Steve is the director of the film. So, Steve, I'm going to focus on you for a few minutes and ask you a few questions. So, starting out, give us a little background on your film experience.
Well, my first film, I started probably October 2020, was it, Jake? Or when we did the Morium?
I think it was around there, yeah. It's definitely a little chilly. It's getting colder.
And windy.
Definitely windy.
So that crowdfunding kind of fell through and didn't go through. So then I decided to adapt one of my other books, In the Dark. And that was filmed, I want to agree with Paige, maybe in March. And that was my first film experience. And before that, I had studied because I always wanted to adapt my books into film. So I studied filmmaking for like a year and a half, 2 years. Because I figured the only way I was going to get it done if I did it myself.
I'm glad you brought that up. What were your study sources? Did you do some film school classes? Were there any books that you used?
YouTube was my friend.
YouTube. Excellent. Are there any channels you want to give a shout out to?
Boy, it's been so long ago, I can't remember. To be honest with you, there were so many of them.
That's okay, man. So let's talk about the story of Trepidity for a second. What inspired that? How did you come up with this screenplay?
Well, that is also based off one of my short stories I had written for a Halloween anthology. And I always wanted to write one, an 80s kind of slasher story. And I just came up with the craziest shit I can think of and went with it. In the short story, it actually takes place on Halloween night in a house. But when you really don't have the budget, you really got to adapt to what you're doing. So thankfully, mm-hmm. we had Ashley's barn to use. And it worked out pretty good.
So In the short story, was there a split originally between 1976, 1986, or was that something you adapted for the film?
I adapted that for the film because I always figure, you know, what's the biggest cliche is mm-hmm. cell phones. How come the cell phones don't work? So I eliminated that by just going back to 86 when there were no cell phones.
So the costumes and the makeup and the hair were super authentic in the movie. Who was responsible for all of that?
That was Hope Hefner. She did the makeup, and Michelle Hefner scattered out and found the wardrobe and everything. Yeah, they did a great job.
What was that like for you all getting to kind of do the whole 80s thing and the 70s thing and wear the clothes and the hair? Like, what was that like for you guys?
I loved it. I love that look. I was feeling flexed.
My jeans actually that I'm wearing were from actually my mom's back in the 80s. So
wow.
Yeah. So they were like actually vintage. So I felt pretty in character with those.
Yeah, it was super cool. Like, Taylor dresses very different than I do. I have no pink in my wardrobe, and that's what she wears from head to toe. In fact, the eyeshadow that Hope used was so neon pink, it like kind of was still on my eyes for days later. It was awesome to just kind of like jump back to the 80s for a weekend.
Yeah. That is super cool. And from your side, were you at the filming as well?
I was at the filming for the 86 segment, but not for the 76 segment.
What was it like kind of getting to step on a film set that takes place in the 80s? Did it give you any kind of like deja vu, you know, take you back?
Oh, totally, totally deja vu, because I graduated from college in 1980. So, I mean, I was a working girl by then, but, you know, like, I mean, I had money because I had a job. So, yeah, we'd go out drinking all the time and telling crazy stories. And we'd watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Hills Have Eyes and stuff like that. So it was a blast.
It is really well done. I mean, when you all see this film, it is really well done. It looks the part. The clothes are right. The hair's right. The makeup's right. Jake's mustache is on point. I just want to call out that mustache again.
She's coming back. Don't worry. Give it a couple weeks.
Oh man, Steve. What was the shooting process like for this film? How long of a shoot was it in total?
We actually got the 86 segment done in like two nights, and I think it was like 12-13 hour nights, if I remember.
Okay.
Something like that, and the 76 was done in one night, and I think that was like 7-8 hours, or something like that. I mean, they were so good. I mean, they knew their parts, so which made everything so much easier.
On average, how many takes would you have per scene typically?
2, 3, maybe 4.
Okay, that's not bad. Were you aiming for like a 3-to-1 shoot with the production?
Yeah, I mean, I figured if you go 3-to-4 and you still can't get it right, it's not working. And takes.
Now,
like I said, they nailed it. They all nailed it. So it was pretty easy. That's how good they are.
It's the performances are top notch. I was saying at the beginning of the podcast, like I really, 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 really enjoyed the film. The cinematography was good. The acting was great. That you could tell there's a cohesiveness to I can't talk tonight, guys. You could tell there was a cohesiveness to the cast. That there absolutely was a chemistry there. It was a really, really well done film. It was just an absolutely fantastic film. What was the writing process like for the screenplay and taking one of your stories and turning it into a screenplay? How long did it take you to do it?
I would say maybe a month and a half. To go through and pick apart what I could use and what I couldn't use. Like I said, having to adapt it from a house into a barn was kind of a challenge, but other than that, it took about a month and a half, I would say.
What gave you the idea? So what made you decide to go from a house to a barn?
We had a barn available.
Okay. Gotcha. So it was a shooting location decision. I totally get that. I absolutely understand that. Did you find it was difficult? I have found one of the most difficult things in writing a screenplay is the dialogue. And one of the, in writing the first screenplay I wrote, I was a little honestly baffled by, like, you know, when you write the story, you can see the scene in your head, you can hear the characters talking, and then you have people read it. And it just doesn't sound right. I found that there's something about like narrative prose in a book that doesn't translate well to a screenplay. Was that a challenge at all when you adapt your stories to screenplays?
It is. But books, it's always tell, don't show. When writing a screenplay, it's reverse. So how I write dialogue, I basically, in a nutshell, talk to myself. I'll sit there and have a conversation with myself.
And then, that's not a bad strategy.
And then I'll, you know, quote unquote, try to act it how I would see it.
What kind of challenges did you run into during the film? During the production?
Cold is one. I mean, it would go from, I think that Sunday it was like mid 60s during the day and drop to like the 30s at night. And I felt bad. These girls were covered in blood and and they were cold. But I think that was the biggest challenge out of it all.
Just the temperature?
Yeah.
Was it an all night shoot? Yes. Or did y'all shoot during the day sometime? So it was totally at night?
Yeah, the only part during the day is when they walk up to the barn.
Wow. Did you guys have any heaters or anything on set?
Hand warmers.
That's, you guys are veterans after this. That cold is hardcore.
Luckily, the 76 segment was a lot better weather. Yeah, I don't know if I could have done the 86 segment. I would have been the biggest crybaby that day. I don't do that cold stuff. Ain't about that.
Well, not only that, JB, you were in that thin windbreaker during the entire shoot. I'm sorry, during the scenes.
That would have caught so much air. I would have been shivering. Oh my God.
That would have been tough. Yeah, that definitely would have been tough. Now, Steve, Beth was telling me you actually did the makeup effects for the 76 segment.
Ashley did that. Ashley did the makeup.
Ashley did it.
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about her process for that, what she did?
She made a lot of blood, that's for sure. And she kind of cheated, like, the pencil in the eye of hope. What she did was she dabbed a little cotton of blood, kind of like squeezed it on her closed eye and stuck the pencil in there. It had hope kind of like hold it with her fingers, which turned out really good.
Yeah,
just got the pickaxe in the chest, and it just blew back against the wall.
The makeup effects are real top notch in this film. They really were. You guys did phenomenal. And the 76 segment was a little bit shorter, but it's kind of a precursor into it makes what happens in the 86 segment make sense. I don't know. Steve, do you want to talk? Is it okay to talk a little bit about the story, or do you kind of want to keep it close to the chest?
I guess I could talk a little bit about it without giving too much away.
Okay.
The 76 segment does lead up to it, and it tells the story of Sophie Miller, who brings her friends to a barn. Because she wants to summon a demon because, you know, her father and stepdad isn't abusing her. She thought summoning a demon, she can use it to get revenge on her stepdad. And unfortunately, that's not the case. And bad things happen. And that's also referenced in the 86 segment when Beth calls a demon. So it's kind of like an urban legend when Beth says it, but it's not.
And it does tie in really well. And I think it's good to have connected those two in the story. So go and actually that's a really neat segue into one of the questions I had. So when the 86 segment starts, Beth is out there. She's really excited. You know, she's showing this barn off to everybody. And at one point she turns around and points at the barn, and literally the door almost falls off the barn. And the question I have to ask, if I asked one question on this podcast, I want to know, was that on purpose or was that like a coincidental thing?
I think the girls came up with that idea of having the door slammed down like that.
So that was planned?
What's that?
That was planned?
Yes.
Can I jump in?
Yes, please.
Okay, so while we're shivering and we were just talking about the barn, like, Steve, I think you were setting up camera stuff and we were like, wouldn't it be so funny if, like, Melissa's so excited about the barn door and it just, like, falls apart? And then Ashley's husband, Dakota, is standing behind the door and he was listening to someone's cue so that he actually physically moved the door on whatever line it was so that it would just kind of, like, fall into place. So we just kind of came up with that on the spot because we thought it was funny. I don't know.
No, it looks like it was an accident. When I saw that, I legitimately thought that had to have been coincidental and just lucky. Because, I mean, it's spot on. Beth turns around and the door falls. Like, it was a great shot. It was really cute and really funny. I think y'all absolutely accomplished that. And then what's great, too, is the rest of the production. Like, the rest of the movie, you see that door hanging there. I mean, like, the continuity's there. Hey, what? So, like, how did you guys get in and out of the barn with that big, heavy door hanging there like that?
There's a side door.
Oh, okay.
When Sophie's opening the door for Jake and her, the friends are coming, that's the side door we used to get in and out.
That makes sense. That was a fantastic shot. Now, Jake, in the 76 segment, I don't know why I noticed this, but I noticed you had dirt on your hands when you sat down. Was there a lot of dirt on the floor in the barn?
I mean, it was a barn, man. It was out there, didn't have the sealed walls. It was, it was pretty dirty in there, which I'm pretty used to that. I work in construction. I like getting dirty. It's actually nice. I got to keep the pants for my costume, and they made great work pants. So I'm still rocking them. They're bloodied as hell, but I mean, that's all right. It blends in.
Have you legitimately worn those pants to the work site?
Yeah, oh, they're sitting right there. I'm looking at them with the belt I got from that, too. It's all covered in blood. The belt's actually still sticky from the blood, but that's my main work belt, actually, now. Yeah.
Did anybody ask questions when you did that for the first time?
I bleed a lot at work, actually. So, like, seeing blood on the clothes isn't really, like, it's nothing crazy. I actually just cut my finger bad today. I got blood all over my shirt.
So they just think you're just incredibly clumsy, essentially, when they look at this.
Yeah, it's a Thursday. Yeah, he's bleeding. What else is new? Come on.
So with all the dirt on the floor, I'm curious because, I mean, you guys are drenched in blood in this movie. Like, did that kind of make it worse? Was the dirt getting in the blood and, like, caking up and stuff? Was that an issue that you guys ran into?
For me personally, right when I got bloodied, I like scratched my eye on something. I don't know. I pretty much couldn't see as soon as I got bloodied, and all I could think about was my eye collapsing on itself, and I had no clue what was happening after that. I could have been covered in dirt. I could have. I had no clue. I wasn't really a person at that point. I'm just trying my best to get hit with a pickaxe, and then just trying my best to act, you know, without losing my main senses.
Yeah. Well, you pulled it off. I mean, you couldn't tell there was something going on with your eye. And you talked on the last episode we did, you talked about driving home like that. I mean, your eye, do you want to tell that story again?
Oh, man, that was a hell of a drive home. It was 2.5 hours. It's like 3 a.m. at this point. And like, I washed most of my face off, but my shirt was still soaked in blood. And it kept like sticking to my chest hair, and I was trying to like pull it off. And I'm driving down just soaked in blood. So anyone that saw me probably thought I just like killed someone or something. And I am like snoozing. I'm trying to stay awake. I'm like eating chips, like trying to do everything. At one point I woke up and I'm like doing 75 in the grass next to the highway. But I careened back on the road and I was able to hunker down and make it down my block. Down the block, it's like the worst. Like right before you get to home, it's like your body starts realizing like, yo, we made it. You can almost sleep. And you just start shutting down, like the whole street is like, it was a hard drive, but I made it safe. Everything was all right, and my eye got back to normal after like another 2 days. It was a fun one.
I'm glad you didn't run into any issues. Do you guys remember the story from the Friday the 13th production? There was a guy hanging from the door, and back then in the blood formula that Tom Savini used back then, they used a chemical that is used in developing film. And at one point the guy had a wound on his eye and they filled it with blood and actually got in his eye. And he ended up going to the hospital because of it. He thankfully didn't lose his vision, but it was bad. And even Tasso Stavrakis, they had a mishap with one of the effects and he ended up having to, they had a tube running. I think it was when Kevin Bacon gets killed. They had a tube running up to the throat and something with the pump broke. So Tasso just grabs the tube and starts using his mouth to push blood out of the tube. And he gets some of it in his mouth. And once the shot's over, he runs to the lake that's out there and starts like putting water in his mouth and trying to get, cause I mean, it's poison. The blood was basically poison back then. And I think it was because of Friday the 13th that blood today has to be non-toxic on sets. Like it can't be harmful for because of situations like that. So what, one of the things I'm curious about too. So when Magdalena comes on the scene, she has headphones on a good chunk of the film. Was she actually listening to music at all? She wasn't. So there was just headphones.
Yeah.
Okay. I was hoping there was some kind of Easter egg or something there that she was actually listening to music.
Just jamming to nothing.
That's acting though, because that's gotta feel so awkward. And actually that's one of the other questions I was gonna ask. There's just seeing where you guys are all dancing in the 86 segment. Were y'all actually playing music, or were y'all just ad libbing silent dance moves?
No, there was music. I think it was actually Dancing in the Dark, if I remember correctly.
Oh, from Billy Idol?
Springsteen.
Or Springsteen. Oh, that's right. That's bad. And don't be mad at me for missing that reference. let's see. So individually for your characters, did any of you draw inspiration from any characters you've seen in other films?
I guess for me, for Taylor, I kind of thought of like Molly Ringwald in Breakfast Club. And well, I guess like a lot of her characters in all of those like John Hughes movies were just like good student, good person, like that kind of stereotype. So I tried to like infuse a little bit of Molly Ringwald in Taylor in the 86 segment.
Taylor, what about you?
I don't know if I specifically, I think there's a bunch of different like actors and characters that I took away from. I don't know if I could say like one specifically, but yeah, I mean, there was like a set sort of persona that I wanted to go with. And then I just kind of took from that and tried to create someone. Yeah. Sam.
How did you channel the darker aspects of your character?
Like the emotional scenes, or do you mean like when, what do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know. I'm trying not to give anything away in the film.
Yeah.
I may have to just completely cut this out.
She almost dropped some spoilers there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll probably just cut this out, because it's tough, because I wanted to, because you did such a good job at the end of the film, and I want to talk more about that, but we can't. We got to keep it secret. I'll cut this whole part out. Jake, did you like when you were doing this, dude? You epitomized like a 70s guy. Like what were you channeling on that, man, with the mustache and the clothes, and even like the kind of the way you walked? Like how did you channel that character?
I was kind of already like riding on the 70s train. I listened to a lot of like 70s playlists at the time, you know, like at work, because I work with like mostly older people in construction, so I got to listen to the oldies all day anyways. So I'm jamming. I already had the mustache, and like my coworkers all told me I looked like a 70s like creep, like a child adopter. Like they're like, Jake, you got to get rid of that mustache. Not right, dude. And then like the next day, Steve emailed me saying he had a part like that was from the 70s. I was like, this is like perfect. So I'm pretty much always in the 70s vibe. I kind of like it there. It's a nice spot.
Well, you got to bring the mustache back, man.
It always comes back, and then it just gets too far, and I got to say no. And then I get rid of it, and then I realize my mistake. And then like another 3 months later, she's full ride, huge. And then I bite it too many times, get pissed off, and then shave it again. It's an endless
cycle. That's a thing. That's a thing when you have a pronounced mustache. It does get in your mouth. It's annoying. I can totally understand that.
I realized after I shaved that every time I went to like take a drink of anything, I would push my mustache to the side first, like with either my hands or like the thing, or like whatever I'm drinking. And then like when I shaved it, I would still like go to do it, and I would just like rub my lip. And I'd be like, what? Like I don't have a mustache.
It feels so weird. Like. That fresh shave on your face, if you've had a beard for any period of time, like it's so cold. Like you could be in a hot room, but the air hitting your face, it feels so cold. It really is such a strange sensation. Steve, okay. So you did something really amazing with this film. And I'm going to compare you to Quentin Tarantino for a second. Because Reservoir Dogs, Tarantino mastered the use of a single location. The majority of that film took place in a warehouse. Your entire film takes place in a barn, and you did it well. To all the filmmakers out there that have no budgets, that they're trying to do something, they have one location. What advice do you have for them? How can they use a single location successfully?
Adapt the best you can. I mean, you could tell a great story no matter where you're at. It's just... Just use what you have is basically my advice, and build a story around what you have. Like I said, any location, you can have a great story. It's just how it's planned out and written.
Mm-hmm. When you, would you say in those situations, the dialogue becomes the most important factor?
Yeah, but you also can't over-dialogue it. It gets really boring. Mm-hmm. So you have to break it up somehow. And it's all about pacing, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say pacing.
Okay, that makes total sense.
Perfect balance of dialogue, some action dialogue. Yeah, I would say that's it.
How many pages was the screenplay?
28.
Okay.
Yeah, 28, 29.
Do you remember how many drafts you had to go through before you had the final?
I would say maybe 3.
Oh, wow. You did in 3.
Yeah. Because I already had the basis of the story from the short story I wrote. Mm-hmm. Now, something coming right off the top of my head, that's a little harder. I mean, I would say like Blood Sisters, that takes longer. I mean, I could go through 5, 6, 7 different versions before I'm happy with it.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And as a first time, by the way, it's, I would never have thought this was your first time producing a film. Cause you've done just an absolutely phenomenal job. I mean, you guys have created something amazing. Y'all should be absolutely thrilled and proud of the product y'all have created. What advice do you have for up and coming producers out there?
Probably the primary thing is know your target market. And you have to find your target market. They're not going to find you necessarily. You have to go find them.
That's good advice. That's really good advice. What do you think helped you prepare the most for stepping into the producer role? Did you read books? Or is it just kind of you just trial by fire? You just did it?
I did not read any books. I have done a lot of organizing of stuff because of my IT background. So spreadsheets are my friend. Budgets. I mean, I've done IT projects that are $1 million. So, I mean, we were working with way, way less with this. So I wasn't intimidated by the numbers at all, but I wanted to make sure that we had enough in the budget to really cover what we needed. And then, you know, you pad some and the platform, Indiegogo takes a percentage. So you have to plan for that. You don't get all the money right away. So you kind of have to plan for that. So it's just, yeah, a lot of planning and just being careful and paying attention to the details.
I do want to ask, was filmmaking always on your radar when you were in IT, or was it just kind of a something? What's the story behind getting into filmmaking for you coming from IT?
Oh, for me? Well, I'm late to the game because I didn't even think about it until I had friends who were making bucket lists of like these fantastic vacations that they wanted to take. And I thought, well, I guess I'm that age. Like, you're supposed to do this. Like, what should I put on my bucket list? And the first thing I came up with was I want to be on Chicago PD. So I started doing background acting. I mean, I had done plays in high school, but it was so long ago, and we only did one a year, that I didn't really have that much acting experience. But having a lot of life experience makes it easier for you to play a multitude of characters because you've experienced so many emotions throughout your lifetime that you can reflect on a situation that triggers the emotion that you're trying to portray as an actor. And you just throw that in the back of your mind, and, you know, you can cry on a dime. You know, you can be angry, you can be frustrated, you know, whatever emotion that you need. So yeah, went started with background acting and then took some classes and got a couple agents, and I've auditioned for speaking roles on some of the Chicago shows, but I haven't booked any yet, but I will.
Do you think you're going to pursue more production work, or are you still going to try to focus on acting?
I'm going to do both because I like the organizational aspect of what I did with this film for producing. So, for example, I'm going to be the producer on Steve's next feature film, It Came From Somewhere, which is a faux film in the 50s creature feature style. So I'll be producer on that. And I do have an acting role in that as well.
I can't, Steve, I'm so excited about that. I know I've talked to you about this over Facebook chat, but the text doesn't tell you how excited I am about that movie. That trailer is awesome. I cannot wait for that movie.
Thank you.
Do you want to say anything about it while you're on?
Ann summed it up pretty good. It is a toss back to 50s B creature features. I really got the inspiration when I was watching an episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000, and it was Teenagers from Outer Space. And the next one I watched was The Creeping Terror, and they were bad. And I thought, you know, that would be fun to do something like that, have everybody dressed up with their hair and the dresses, all 50s.
And just make it
as low budget as possible. Have the girls just overact, underact, everything like they would do back in the day.
And that's what's so beautiful about doing a production like that is you can get away with that. You can have terrible acting, terrible special effects, but it's absolutely on purpose. You mean, you could channel your inner Roger Corman. I cannot wait for this movie. I have to see a screener of it when you finish up it because I have to see it. I just want to say you guys are, you are delightful. It is a privilege to get to talk to y'all and to interview you and to be a part of your family. Because every time I've spoken with you, y'all have made me feel like a part of the AcroStar family. And I really appreciate that. And I want to thank each of you for coming on the show. I've had a lot of fun. I hope you guys have too. And again, I want to reiterate how good Trepidity was. I can't wait for it to come out. It's going to do phenomenal. Y'all did a fantastic job.
Thank you.
You are so nice. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I'm probably going to have each of you on individually as guests as well. Just talk about your acting careers as well. And I know I've talked to you about that and Steve as well. But once again, thank you all so much. Anytime you want to come back on the show. In fact, we can do another show when Steve's new movie hits. We can absolutely have another episode about it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Awesome.
Heck yeah.
Really appreciate it, guys. I'm going to go ahead and cut recording, okay? Hey, everybody. Brian here. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. I had an absolute blast making it, and I'm so glad each of you could join me. I do want to take a quick moment to remind each and every one of you that you're awesome, that you're loved, and that you matter, and I'm so glad each and every one of you are here. So until next time, stay tuned, stay curious, and as George Romero used to always say, stay scared.